Why should you start thinking about your exit early?
Maybe they're established startups that are kind of struggling into that second stage scale-up phase, or maybe they've been in business for a decade and they're thinking along those lines now, what am I going to do?
If you look across the board, there's only about 20-25% of small businesses that actually sell.
So 1 in 4 businesses that want to be up for sale actually successfully sell. You and your team have a significantly higher success rate. What's making that difference?
What we really help our clients do is create a business that is sellable. You have to create something that the buyer can step into and take off and grow.
Welcome to another episode of the Go, Go, Grow podcast, where we share practical advice and growth strategies for scaling B2B businesses. We are your hosts, Dasha and Michelle.
Today, we are welcoming our guest, Damon Pistolka, who I like to refer to as one of the most inspiring people on LinkedIn for entrepreneurs and aspiring entrepreneurs. In addition to that much appreciated gig, he is also the co-founder and managing director of Exit Your Way. He's also the host of 2 very impactful podcasts, which are The Faces of Business and Manufacturing E-Commerce Success. His mission and the mission of his company is to help empower founders as they are looking for ways to scale and successfully exit their business. He's a perfect fit to add value to the founders in our audience and the entrepreneurs who are looking to scale up. So welcome, Damon.
Thanks for having me here, Dasha and Michelle. Just happy that I can stop by today.
Damon, it's so great to have you. And we want to dive right in. So a lot of the people in our audiences are, you know, scale-ups, but we also have a lot of smaller startups, you know, people just getting going. And so I want to start with the question, like, a lot of these people might not be thinking about selling their company yet. They're barely getting their feet on the ground, just trying to figure out how to, you know, produce that product and start selling it in a way that they're not the ones doing everything themselves. They have maybe a couple people. But why should they be thinking about selling their business so early in the game? And what should they be learning from what it takes to sell a business that can have impact even at an early stage of one's development and growth?
Yeah, great questions. So I'll address the first one. Why should you start thinking about your exit early? Because if you know that you are going to, or at least in your heart, right? We don't ever know what's going to happen with our business. But if we really think when we start our business that we're going to be a multi-million dollar top line business, and we're going to have employees and we're going to have things like that, the sale of your business can generate a significant amount of additional income when you're done, or when you want to do something else, really not done working, just done, want to do something else. So if you start with that in mind in the beginning, you'll build your business a little differently. If you know that your business is going to be a 1 or 2 person show, you're going to be most of the value in the business. Maybe I'm a solo consultant, right? That's a business where you're likely not going to sell it. And that's okay. It's just you have different things along the way, because if I'm going to develop a multi-million dollar business and I'm going to get paid for that I can consider that in generating wealth for whatever I'm going to do next. So in the beginning, that may change my long-term investment strategies a little bit. It'll certainly change the way I build that business, but it's affecting that from the beginning on what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to build a team faster. I'm trying to scale into something beyond myself faster so I can really be a visionary out there, making sure we're moving in the right direction and building value. Whereas if I'm a solopreneur or a small company where I've got 1 or 2 employees and I really don't think I'm going to sell it, maybe I'm a lawyer, right? Lawyer, great example, lawyers. They oftentimes don't sell, or I'm a medical provider of some sort, you know, chiropractor or something like that. They run very successful businesses. You know, you can have a chiropractic firm that's doing $300,000-$400,000 a year. But when it comes to the end, if you can't find another chiropractor that wants to take over your business usually closes. Honestly, they just usually close. Well, that's not bad if you're that chiropractor or that lawyer that wants to do that and just say, listen, I'm going to make sure my clients go to somebody else that I really trust at the end, and I'm going to close my business down in an orderly fashion. That's a great exit for people. I talk about selling a business a lot, but I'll tell you, I tell more people that they should consider just orderly shutting their business down if it's really the best thing, because I can walk up to lots of people and they'll tell me they can sell my business. Because on the small business side, in the $200,000, $500,000 in revenue kind of business, business brokers will take a listing and they will say that they can sell it. But the likelihood of selling it is very, very, very small. And do you want to go through the hassle?
Yeah.
You know, you can do it differently.
That makes perfect sense. And what you just shared with us is a perfect summation of the title of this podcast, which is Starting with the End in Mind. So great synopsis. We could not have scripted that better ourselves. But, you know, you brought up business brokers. And when a lot of people think about exiting their business, if they are going to sell, they think, okay, well, what are my options? There's business brokers, there's mergers and acquisitions. But one of the phrases that you use is not looking at it as a transition. I'm sorry, not looking at it as a transaction, but as a transformation.
Yeah.
So can you speak more to that about what Exit Your Way does and how you approach that?
Yeah. So what we really do is we've seen it. If you look across the board, there's only about 20, some people say 25% of small businesses that actually sell, right? So, and that's everything from about $5 million in revenue under. Mm-hmm. And what we really help our clients do is create a business that is sellable, but that really takes a transformation, because to create the business that's most attractive to a buyer, you have to create something that the buyer can step into and take off and grow. So really, from the current owner's perspective, they have to switch that and they have to transform the way they're thinking about their business and quit looking at it as, I've had it for 15, 20 years. It's put my kids through college. It's paid for my home or homes. It's created a great life for me. Someone else surely wants it. And even though it's only making the same amount of money, I mean, that does not really attract a new buyer. That's really attractive to that current owner, but it's not necessarily attractive to that buyer. So they really have to understand. And I can be in that situation, I can be the most of the value in the business because I can know how everything runs and do it all, right? That's perfectly fine. Yeah. But to make it attractive to a buyer, it's got to be something that they can step into, they can operate successfully from very early on, and they can grow value, because they have a much different financial makeup, because they have to pay for that business. If you want to sell it for $1 million, they have to pay that $1 million investment back and pay themselves a living going forward. So doing that is one of the key things that a lot of owners just miss. It's the key thing, because you really have to transform your business so it's attractive to a buyer.
That makes sense.
Well, Damon, I read a statistics from Exit Your Way, which is that the market industry average for selling your business, like sort of success rate, is about 25%. So 1 in 4 businesses that want to be up for sale actually successfully sell, but that you and your team have a significantly higher success rate. What's making that difference?
Well, it's just what I said. We look at the size of the business. We look at the industry they're in. We look at the ownership role, the team that they've got, and the growth rate. I mean, it comes down to the team and growth rate more than anything. You can run a flat, low growth business forever if you're an owner and your debts are paid and it's fine. You know, it's just an ATM, right? And they're all over the place. But we've had people that have that kind of ATM pulling $1 million out of their business every year, and they can't get people to buy it because they're too involved, so their team isn't developed out enough. They hold too much technical knowledge in the intricate operations of the business, and they don't have any growth, right? Because the buyer is going to look at it way different than you are. So when we look at the team, if you are the best salesperson in your company and you're the owner, that's a problem. How are you going to generate revenue after you're gone? If you're the best technical person in your business and you are going to leave the company, how is it going to continue on after you? Those are two key things that you have to take care of as an owner before you leave. It's got to be able to grow without you, and it's got to be able to operate without you.
Well, how long does it take typically for you guys to create that transformation?
You know, it can take a long time. If you got a $5 million revenue business, it's probably going to take you 6 months to a year to do it, depending on how much your team can take over responsibilities that they don't currently have, or if you have to augment your team. You know, because oftentimes we find that a visionary owner can operate their business, but they need to bring somebody else in that's actually going to run the business on a day-to-day for us to be able to sell the business. I mean, that's not an easy process. And so that can take a while to do those kind of things. So it's 6 months to a year easy.
So Damon, when you and I first met, gosh, it's been what, about a year now. One of the things you told me that really surprised me is you often engage with a business owner. It could be 18 to 24 months before they go up for sale or they're ready to actually do that exit. And you shared with me that in those cases, that's where they need more transformation. Would that be the case where maybe it's a lifestyle business, like a service-based business, and the owner really has to extricate themselves?
Yeah, one of the main things that we tell business owners is you really have to want to do this, first of all, because we're not talking about I'm going to drive to work a different way. It's like you might drive a different car, or you may decide that you have to walk to work and it's 5 miles each way. I mean, that's the kind of thing you're committing yourself to. You're committing yourself to a much different kind of work or organization, right? Mm-hmm. So it takes us a long time to really let them understand this. And when I talk about that, it can be a year or more before we start working with somebody, because we want them to really understand. We want them to go and read, you know, read Traction or read Predictable Success or read Scaling Up or one of these books that talks about really what you need to do, or go out and look at the Warlow thing, Value Builder, you know, to really understand as much as you can about this, because this is not for everyone. If 75% of the businesses don't sell, why put yourself through it? You know, if you're ahead of the game in this, selling your business may not be what you want to do, because it's, you don't have to do that. You just have to get the amount of money you need out of your business for whatever you want to do next. And that could be, I'm running it a few years longer or whatever. But this transformation and the time and what you have to do is so key, because if you don't do it, you're going to go through this process and you are likely not going to sell.
You know, you mentioned the book Predictable Success. Dasha and I both are connections with Scott Ritzheimer. His company, it's actually here in Atlanta where I'm based, is Scale Architects. And he has a coaching practice based on Predictable Success and the author. And they work with founders and help them scale and kind of go through those processes that are probably before they would engage with you. Actually, Dasha and I individually have both been guests on Scott's podcast. It's really a great podcast. It's Secrets of the High Demand Coach. So I want to give a shout out to him. And Dasha, I think you had a great experience with him as well. Are you familiar with Scott Ritzheimer, Damon?
No, I'm not, but I'm going to look him up after this.
Well, we'll give you a personal introduction.
That'd be cool.
Damon, I have a question in terms of, do you see some differences between what the kind of big holdup is in making your company more sellable in service-based businesses versus like product or manufacturing-based businesses?
You know, I think it comes from technical knowledge, right? Because if I'm an engineer, if I'm a plumber, if I'm an electrician, and I open an electrical contracting company or an engineering firm, that is something where I am going to definitely be doing the work right from the beginning, right? If I'm going to be a manufacturing company owner, I'm going to probably do some of the work in the beginning, but very quickly after that, other people have to start doing the work. Good very point. Quickly. I mean, you can't go very long in manufacturing with one person to make enough of anything to really create enough revenue, right? And there's like CNC places where there's the owner operator is running three or four machines kind of thing all over the world. But you get into manufacturing and it changes quicker. So oftentimes the owners of those businesses are a lot more technically involved in the day-to-day operations, I think is where that is.
That's definitely a good point. So we're talking so far about starting with the end in mind. What about those business owners that are well into their business? Maybe they're established startups that are kind of struggling into that second stage scale up phase, or Maybe they've been in business for a decade and they're thinking along those lines now, what am I going to do? So they're well past that start with the end in mind.
Yeah.
How do they kind of change their thought process? You kind of alluded to that already, but other than reading some of those books, what are your recommendations that they can just start ingraining in themselves, just that different mentality?
Elevate and delegate. I mean, take that one thing out of EOS and traction. They really need to make sure their people are doing what they're doing, and then roles and responsibilities. Those are the two things that we focus on absolutely the most. And of course, you got to set goals for everyone and all those other things. But as the owners and the founders of the business, they really need to understand and be reevaluating it constantly. It's like, okay, what's taking up my time now? And is really the best use of my time? Because if I find that I had to do something, and this is what happens a lot, right? So we're going to do something new. I'm the founder. I'm the one that's going to do it in the beginning. And I find myself down the road a year from then, and it's much bigger, a lot more work, and I'm still doing it. And I shouldn't be, right? I should be off to the next thing, or I should be doing something with that, but somebody else should be processing, doing the stuff that's going on. That's very common. They need to do that. They need to hand those things off and move on to something else so they can make sure that's going and keep the right process, the measures, everything else in place, and accountabilities and responsibility, but they have to move. So elevating and delegating themselves, delegating the work that they really need to have other people do, and continuing to make sure they're ratcheting up what they do, because now they can influence more people to get more things done and create more value. And that's really why we're doing that.
Dasha, that really speaks to one of your areas of expertise, which is that organizational structure, finding out your talent gaps and figuring out who needs to do what. So that's something we really need to focus on in a future episode with you.
I was going to ask Damon, from a kind of planning perspective, I know on the EOS system, they have the rocks, which is really just like, it's really just quarterly planning with metrics. Do you guys tend to implement systems like that? Do you have your own system that you've designed, or just general like planning and metrics are important, have your processes? Where's sort of the level of depth that you guys go into the planning and the metrics on with the companies you work with?
Yeah, we do them, but we don't follow an EOS based system. You know, they've got good stuff that they put together, and it's easy for people to understand. That's why I reference it. That's why I reference predictable success and scaling up, and it's whatever feels right. But when you look at them, and honestly, showing my age, we were doing this before those books were written. And honestly, we learned them because working in the investor owned businesses like I did prior to Exit Your Way, I mean, you have to achieve your stated goals, but you know, if you lay a budget out, you got to hit it, or you're not there very long, right? So you understand the kind of things that you have to do as far as you have to get the right people on the team, or you're not going to move forward fast enough. You have to make sure everyone's got goals, because if you don't, and you're not measuring them consistently, you don't know where you're at. And when the financials come out and you don't hit it, if you're the one that has to go to the boardroom and do the presentations on how the company did, like I used to do every month, you only have a few before you're not there anymore. So you really have to understand, out of a, if nothing else, a survival basis, is how do we lay out a budget and how do we meet that budget? And it comes down again to those two things: getting the right people on the bus, making sure they understand where we're going, and then measuring performance.
So one thing that when I work with startup founders, and even ones with really small teams, maybe themselves, one or two people, but one of the things I almost always start out is, let's actually write out your holistic company goals, like not just the one thing that you're doing, but all the other things you have to get done so that next year you're still alive, et cetera. One of the things I struggle with a little bit trying to figure out, even for myself, is what's the right balance of spending time working on, let's call it on the business, right? Which is writing your strategy, looking at your metrics, right? Especially for these smaller sized companies, versus the amount of time you need to be spending, like doing things that grow your business's revenue and the financial side of things, right? Because the structure is important because that's what creates the basis for future growth. But then if you're spending too much time on the structure and not enough time on the revenue, then you have a lot of structure that's not producing revenue. What's sort of the criteria you use to figure out or to coach people who are either leaning one way or the other, how much time they should be spending in each of those categories?
Well, in a smaller business, I always use the 80-20 rule, right? 20% of your time, if it's focused well on your business, building your business, doing what you're doing, should be. You can work 80% on just getting stuff through your business in the beginning. But that 20% is so valuable because you're picking your head up, you're looking around, you're going, okay, this is what I'm doing next, and I'm implementing that now. This is what I'm going to do next. And then I'm back again to doing the work I need to do on the, in to, you know, process the customer work I need to do or whatever we're doing. And I think that works pretty well. And as you get bigger, though, that 20% will grow into 30%, 40%, 50% to pretty soon it's 80% of your time is spent on big deals. It's on long-term vision. It's on, are we moving this? Are we changing the direction of this boat to where we need it to be? Because it's different than where it is today. And are we going to be able to respond to these market changes I see? So in the beginning, though, you're going to work 80% on your business. And that, and it's funny because I was just having this conversation earlier this week with a newer business owner, not a client, just somebody that we were just friend. And it's like, when you go out on your own as an entrepreneur and you've come out of a corporate setting, you've got to understand that this is no longer a job that you're going to be able to punch in and punch out of. And you really need to go at that deeply before you do it, because it's easier just to keep it. I shouldn't say it's easier. It may be a better option for you to stay in the corporate world, because it's not something where your paycheck is guaranteed, and you're really going to have to do this. And that 80% that you're going to do might be 40 or 50 hours, and your 20% might be Saturday and Sunday morning or something like that, or later in the evenings or something, because you got to carve that time out no matter what. And then it's always that battle of, how do I not burn myself out, and how do I get this done? And that's where you really have to understand, especially in the beginning, how do I delegate? How do I get, you know, virtual assistants to help me? How do I do this to just leverage my time and value my time more, because it is so important.
One of the things I say is, being an entrepreneur is not what you do, it's who you are.
Yeah.
And if you at heart are not an entrepreneur, it's probably not what you should do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you're looking at what your options are, how do you know what your business is worth? I'm not talking about whether or not it can be sold or whether or not you have a financial exit. How do you know if you're talking about hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars, or, you know, if you can even dare say the billions of dollars?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's pretty simple, actually. It's math. So if you can go online and pick out a loan calculator and go, how much does my business make in a year? That, outside of paying myself, how much money is left over? Because the next buyer is going to need to pay themselves. Uh-huh. Normal industry wage. So say I make $400,000 in my business, and I'm going to take whatever, $150,000 out. So I have $250,000 left profit that I can do with whatever I want. Then I go and I say, okay, cut that in half, because this is what a bank will do. So I have $125,000 a year that can go towards debt service. And banks call debt service ratio, which is, they call it 50% or 2-to-1. I forget how it is. That's, but basically that $125,000 that's left, that has to cover the loan, the payment of that loan. So figure out how big a loan you can take with $125,000 a year payment on current interest rates. It's that simple. Because if you're selling something under $5 million, someone's going to buy from the SBA, they have to come in with 10 to 20% down, and they're going to do it over 10 years. And currently, I think it's 11% or something like that. They're going to have to pay an interest, and they're going to have enough cash. 50% of the cash that's available is going to have to cover the loan payments for the year, roughly.
I have a few friends who've done this, actually, and I do keep hearing about this as a growing trend, or maybe not so much as a growing trend, but as kind of an area of opportunity, which is the sort of seed fund-based business purchasing. Have you encountered, I'm sure you know what that is, but have you encountered that in the sales of businesses? And what do you think about that as an option for exits?
Now, what was that again?
So it's typically a MBA graduate will some private money,
yeah,
to buy a business, and then they end have really good returns, is my understanding.
Yeah, search funders. We deal with search fund buyers all the time. Yeah, it's very common. You know, you'll get somebody that comes out of a good school with an MBA and they got some business experience ahead of that. They'll get an equity backing behind them. And yeah, they're great buyers. And it's actually probably, if you look across the board, that's where we sell most of our companies, because that's, you know, that up to about 10 or 20 million in price, that's a good place to sell them. And you don't have to prepare your companies as much as you do. If you're making $3 or $4 or $5 million, you really need to prepare your company differently, because in that search fund kind of company, that CEO needs to be able to come in and set in a CEO type position. If I'm going to sell something that's bigger than that in the next level of a platform company for an investor, that has to have the entire executive management team that can develop and execute a five-year growth strategy. And they are. They have to be in place and doing it. So it's a much different preparation process for us if we know that that business is likely going to go to a search funder.
And have you found that there's anything different about what the business owner can do to make their business specifically attractive to that search funder?
Oh, yeah. It's a lot different. It's creating, you know, as the business owner, what they're really doing is creating a perfect CEO position for themselves. And then what they're doing and getting their business growing really hard. And then what they do is they're creating a perfect position for that buyer to drop into, you know, getting themselves out of it, but getting themselves in the right decision and in the right place in the business and get the business growing really well is a perfect spot to put it, because that a search fund buyer honestly can't make very much money. The buyers, the CEO can't make very much money if you've not growing fast, but they, because they're going to get a percentage of the business too for their participation in this alongside the investors, they can make a lot more money if your growth rate is strong. So a fast growing business set up so the owner that's leaving is in a CEO position is the best way you can do that.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So to kind of wrap up where we've come so far, if we wanted to put it into three short and sweet bullet points, it sounds like you first need to understand your options if you're a business owner and determine what your desired outcomes may be, whether it's exiting your business, closing down your business, making it a generational type of business where you leave it to a specific person, whether it's generational or whatever the case may be. And then you need to identify what you need to do, make measurable, specific, time-bound goals, otherwise known as SMART. And then you need to engage the support that you need and get the resources that you need, discover what you don't know and when you need to do those things. So recently I looked at your website on Exit Your Way, and you have an amazing amount of free resources. Yes, I said free. And it is in all shapes and sizes. So you have assessments, ebooks, PDFs, checklists, pretty much anything in any format that somebody might need. And it's on how to run your business, you know, basic management principles. It's on valuation. It's on how to increase value, how to do business acquisitions. So, I mean, it really is a complete education. So when somebody is not really sure of maybe the timeline and they're looking at all this information and say, where do you suggest they start? Now, again, you mentioned the books. If they don't know what exactly they want to do, but now they've decided what they want to do, where do they start on your resources?
Well, you know, I think doing the research, right? Everybody wants to make an informed decision. And that's why we provide as many resources as we do. And we're trying to add more as we can. And that's what I think is the first key part of it, is really understanding why we take so much time with clients before we work with them. Hey, you got to know this is right. You got to know we're the right people and all that. Don't rush into it. Mm-hmm. Because you will get into this. If you can rush into it, spend a lot of money, waste a lot of time, and realize you're not with the right people, or you tried to do it yourself and it didn't work. So go and look at the things, because if you think you're going to sell your business, research how to sell a business, what it takes, what doesn't work, and really get to the point that you're comfortable with, I know enough about what I'm going to be doing to be dangerous. And then I've talked to enough people that I really feel it in my heart, feel it in my bones, that I think this person or this company is going to be the right company for me. Because selling a business is like, you know, walking your child down the aisle at a wedding almost, because it is going away. They are not going to stay at live at your house anymore after this, usually, right? It's going to be, it is gone.
Hopefully.
Yeah. We've all had that, but it's a gut-wrenching thing, right? So this is where I'm just going to say, I think most business brokers and investment bankers gloss over this because we are in this every day. We're doing transactions. Boom. They're transactional focus. And you really got to know that person's the right person, because you're going to be at there in times and everyone is, it's like, God, why are we trying to do this? And you really have to know that they're going to tell you that this is what we need to do, and you're going to need to trust their guidance and go with it, because you're going to be in uncharted waters all the way from negotiation. I tell you that, well, I would just real quick, sorry to interrupt, but
no,
negotiation ahead. In a business sale is the most gut-wrenching, ugly stuff you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Because it's often the first time that this business owner has ever been in a situation where they have no control over what they're going to get paid for their business, really, because it's either yes or no. And I don't care if you say, I want $100 million for my business. If that buyer doesn't think it's worth 100, they're not going to pay you that. They're going to pay you 75. Take it or leave it. And so you really, as that business owner, you have to say, listen, this is what I will accept. Bottom line. And if we get better, we get better. If people tell me my baby is ugly, I'm just going to have to say, oh, that's great. Your opinion is awesome, and move on, you know, because it is going to be there. And it goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And that deal fatigue, when you're in it, it can really be pretty trying. And that's why it's so important to be in it with somebody that you really trust, because it's our job as much being in there and helping somebody sell that business. It's our job just as much to help that client through it as it is to get that deal done.
And you have to be happy and make peace with the sale.
Yeah.
I do know one person that sold their business. It was a family business. They sold it to a corporation. They didn't like what happened and they bought it back. Mm-hmm. And that was Donato's. If you're familiar with Donato's Pizza, it's based out of Columbus, Ohio, where I'm from. I went to high school with the Grody sisters. I was actually between Jane and Katie, and their uncle and father started the chain. Well, they sold to McDonald's. They didn't like what happened to the quality of the pizza. They ended up buying it back. Mm-hmm. And Jane is now, she was CEO. I'm not sure what her title is now. And they have just blossomed and grown. That is a rarity.
Yeah.
If you sell your business, you usually can't buy it back.
Yeah.
So be happy with your decision.
Yeah. You know, and that's the one of the things that I talked to Matt Middendorf yesterday about that with ESOPs, employee stock ownership programs for selling your business that way. That if you're really concerned about legacy and community and things like that, it's an option for you. It's not a quick way out for owners, mm-hmm. but you can often get out for more money, and it really does protect the legacy a bit more. Because in the end, selling to an investor or selling to a large corporation like that, they have to run it the way that they need to run it to get their results they need. It's about, you know, getting the return they need off it, because that's what it's for. And quite honestly, that is often the only option that some people have when they sell their business. But there are others. That is a good story, because most of the time, you know, we've seen it before. I've seen it personally in one of the businesses I was in, and we sold. That the corporation that bought it closed down the business there 2 or 3 years later. And it was a $30 million business too. It was not a small one. So, you know, you're talking about a lot of employees that no longer had jobs. And that's the kind of thing that we really talk with our clients about too, is what are your goals? I mean, is that something that's going to break your heart if that happens? If it is, then we might be able to adjust what happens. Take a different path.
Yeah. Well, Damon, before we hop off, and we're just so grateful for all your insights here for our listeners, but before we hop off, I know before we started the episode, you mentioned a couple of interesting new things that you're launching as options for people to engage with your company and get help. Could you share a little bit of that with our listeners and let them know if they might be a good fit?
we've got a couple things that are coming up. We've been trying to figure out our business is a boutique business, right? We don't work with a ton of businesses at any time, but we've really been trying to figure out how we branch out and help more business owners. You know, our free resources is one way, but what we've got coming up in the second quarter is we're going to release a cohort program for business owners that want to really prepare their business for exit, and they're thinking about exiting in the next few years. It's going to be a 6-month long program where we go bi-weekly training with homework, office hours, all this kind of stuff that we're going to be doing. That's really going to step them through the process of getting their business ready for sale into the value they need, so they can do it themselves if they want to, and really set themselves on a course for exit success. And another one that I'm doing that's more of a fun and passion project for me is, you've mentioned before, I do a couple live stream shows, The Faces of Business. Mm-hmm. I do the Manufacturing E-Commerce Success. And so I'm doing 4 shows a week. And through that, Kurt Anderson, the co-host on Manufacturing E-Commerce Success, and myself are launching a live stream coaching program for B2B business owners in manufacturing and industrial kind of businesses that really can use live streaming as a way to differentiate themselves and establish themselves as thought leaders and build community around their business. Because we find those businesses, are really having trouble developing themselves in the industry and content, first of all, so people can find them and answer their questions, and also just a fun way for people to get to know them.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And what a great way to leverage all the learnings from the podcast side of your business as well. Yeah. Help your clients in different ways. I love that. We're definitely really excited to be hosting a podcast as well. And the people we get to meet and conversations we get to have as well, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
We will have links to all of Damon's information, his website, his 2 podcasts, especially the page that all of his resources are on, because I know our listeners are going to want to see that. We'll also add Scott Ritzheimer and Scale Architects, a link to that. And just in case you're interested in Donato's, which is absolutely the best pizza around, it's a thin crust, and perhaps Jane's appearance on Undercover Boss, I'll include that as well. And a ton of other resources you'll find in our show notes. Dasha and I want to thank you so much for joining us. As always, if you found value in our show today, please do share it with somebody who can find value as well. You'll find us on all the major podcast outlets. And thank you once again, Damon. You're always a pleasure to speak with.
Well, thanks, guys, for having me here today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll see you again soon.